from, you know, fluctuating downward. And no, these guys actually like, I mean, we're talking about a president who got his jollies as a child sticking M-80s up the butts of frogs and watching the frogs blow up. This guy likes to watch things go bang, John. And that should just creep out the whole bloomin' world.
Idiot.
He likes to see things explode, whether it's a frog or a Persian. Frog, Persian, you know, same thing in George's mind. Disturbing, ain't it? Hey, John, you've got a show to do.
Yeah, and we got some classic Aussie rock coming up. I think this is going to be a theme for the next few days. And I know you had a quick listen. This is a great old track, and we'll start the show with that. So we'll see you on the other side, my friend.
Cool, brother. And so here is the late, great Lowell George reminding you to... Revenge. It's called retribution. It's called vendetta. That's not defending the country, dick.
This is a top to you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look. Right across the board.
Oh.
11,
oh,
11,
and most
11,
of the
and
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4 head-on. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard. Boxed Up here for a Wednesday night or Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon, all depending on where you are on this beautiful blue marble, such as it still is. Coming to you from Sydney, Australia, as per normal, and we got some stuff to do today. Now, as I mentioned in the horn section, I'm going to continue on my little vibe of great Australian rock and roll. And this happens to be one that I've had, I've actually had the pleasure of mixing this band, well, three quarters of this band, and this particular track live once. And I'm speaking of a band called Daddy Cool. Now, their first album, which this track that we're going to play is from an album called Daddy Who from 1970. And the band is led by a guy by the name of Ross Wilson. Really great kind of riffy blues guitar player. Has had a great career with Daddy Cool, did three albums. Then he went off and had different bands, did solo things. And actually, Daddy Cool had reformed not long ago to open up for the Beach Boys when they toured here the last time. And a few years ago, I was doing an Australia Day gig out in Parramatta. It was an outdoor gig, and Daddy Cool was one of the acts. Or actually, it was Ross Wilson. But I do believe that Wayne Duncan and Ross Hannaford were both in that lineup. So it was pretty much Daddy Cool. And I was very surprised, you know, when I walked up, when they showed up, I was running front of house. I was expecting them to have their own sound guy. And they didn't. I was shocked. And Ross said, "No, man, it's all yours. It's all yours." And I was like, "Right on." And it was an extremely hot day in the middle of summer. And throughout the day leading up to when these guys went on, and it was so hot. It was so hot. How hot was it? It was so hot that the LCD displays on my outboard gear, like the reverb units and things, were actually disappearing. They were all going blank because they were so hot that they couldn't actually register their patterns to show me anything. And it was so hot that I was progressively losing channels on the board due to heat. And thankfully, as these guys were coming on, everything started to cool down. And just as they went on, it was kind of like the Australian said, "We will have full functioning PA for Daddy Cool." And my two reverb units came back to life. Channels on the desk all started coming back to life. And when they played this track, now this is an absolute Australian classic. And in fact, the track that you're going to hear is actually transferred from vinyl. You'll hear those, you know, telltale little pops and clicks, and I think it just adds to the time warp of when this song came. And it was one of those really amazing, almost spiritual experiences that I had. You know, here's this lone American mixing an Australian legend in front of a couple thousand people outside, you know, out in the sun with their picnic lunches and the whole thing, and watching a couple thousand Australians just absolutely go nuts and all sing along with this song. And it's just an absolute Australian classic. There are links to their various websites on today's blog post. I believe the main site is just daddycool.com.au. The MySpace page is / daddycool the band. And you'll see a little picture of Mr. Ross Wilson in today's version. And there's some videos of recent appearances, and they're just great fun. It's a real throwback to just, I don't know, some. It's not angry, it's just, it's fun. It's good fun. So I guess without further ado, Eagle Rock from Daddy Cool, 1970. Roll it, Bob.
Turn around once and we'll do the Eagle Rock. Come on, man, boy, you're rocking well. Yeah, you do it so well.
Now that's just fun. That's just fun. You know, and I was saying to Bob in the private chat, we had a rather tight volume limit at that gig, and there was no stopping me when this track came up. I broke the law. Just had to crank it up, make it good and loud, and to just see people just dancing in the sun, you can't beat that. And this is, you know, that's what music's supposed to be about. It's just good stuff. Anyway, where are we going? Okay, y'all have probably heard about this huge section of ice sheet that is separated over the last couple of days. You know, it's like the entire size of Greater Sydney. It's huge. And I would think that this would be one of those, you know, moments or events that would give even the most critical a moment of pause about what is happening to our planet. Now, unfortunately, and I'll get to later, for some, it's only just turned up the uneducated rhetoric. So, I started looking around for a couple of links regarding this, and I came across this one via AFP at Google. And from Brussels, UN climate chief warns of accelerated melting of ice caps. Now, I've been talking about this for ages, that, you know, we're dealing with a situation of feedback loops now. And it's constantly, you know, getting faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. So, here's what he had to say. From Brussels, the head of the UN Intergovernmental Climate Change Body on Wednesday voiced strong concern at the accelerated melting of the polar ice caps, calling for international tariffs on carbon emissions. And it's these statements that make certain people go, oh, it's just another reason for them to tax us. You know, it's just to tax us. It's just to tax us. That's really not what it's about. It's about paying for the damage and investing in the future. And he says, quote, there's enough evidence to show that there is accelerated melting of some of these large bodies of ice. West Arctic ice sheet, the Greenland ice sheet, Mr. Pachuri, chairman of the International Government Panel on Climate Change, told reporters at the European Parliament in Brussels. It's an issue of great concern. His comments came after satellite images by the University of Colorado's National Snow and Ice Data Center showed Antarctica's massive Wilkins ice shelf has begun disintegrating under the effects of global warming. Now, this is slightly different than just, you know, floating polar ice. We're talking, this is land ice that will be adding a huge amount of water to the sea. And just like when you drop an ice cube in a glass of water, there's displacement, the level rises. The collapse of a substantial section of the shelf was triggered February 28th when an iceberg measuring 41.2.4 kilometers, that's 25.5 by 1.5 miles, broke off its southwestern front. Pachuri spoke of the possibility of irreversible and abrupt changes that will result in several meters of increased sea levels as a result of global warming, blamed in part on carbon dioxide emissions. He refused to speculate on how soon such catastrophic changes could take place, but insisted on the urgent need to introduce an international system for charging polluters for carbon emissions. I think we need some coordinated actions that would put a price on carbon, he said, adding that such a system would avert the need to introduce tariffs and other punitive measures on imports from countries with lax emissions rules. The IPCC is a scientific and blah, 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 blah. Now, see this, what he refers to here at the end, talking about adding such a system would avert the need to introduce tariffs and other punitive measures on imports from countries with lax emissions rules. The EU is discussing this kind of action. Before Australia signed on to Kyoto, the EU said they were considering legislation and agreements to increase tariffs on imports from countries that weren't signed on to the international coordinated effort to come up with a solution. And at that time, it was the United States and Australia. Now, it is only the United States. And I was talking to my brother the other day, and he said, well, you know, India and China got to get on board. And I tried to explain to him that they're a lot more on board than you're getting informed of. And the point that I didn't get to make to him, because I don't try to be over political when talking with family all the time, you know, it's gotten me in trouble before, that the reason why the United States has to come to the table is because the United States is responsible for a large amount of the damage done already. And if you've seen pictures of this thing, Nanette is mentioning it in the chat room. If you've seen pictures of this ice sheet breaking off, it's amazing. I mean, it is so huge. I mean, you're talking about an ice sheet that they say is something the size of Manhattan Island has broken off. Now, part of the reason why these things have broken off is as global temperatures rise, this is something I covered a fair bit, I don't know, way back. Pardon me. As global temperatures rise, these ice sheets that are on land, there's a little thing that happens. They're not melting from the top, but as the ground underneath warms up, you end up with a layer of water between the land and the ice, and it acts as a lubricant. And we've been watching these ice sheets actually accelerate in their movements. Nanette says her it's 7 times bigger than Manhattan and the size of Connecticut. It's probably right. I don't have it directly in front of me, but I mean, you know, 25 miles by 1.5 miles. That's huge. That is one huge ice cube in our global glass of water. Now, we might not see tomorrow the water come, you know, straight up over the shoreline. But these things are accelerating at an alarming rate, at an absolutely alarming rate. So we're going to see more of this, and I guarantee you we're going to see larger ones. And it's very, very, very alarming. Yeah, that's right, Lottie. It's a hell of a lot of frozen margaritas. And unfortunately, we got too many people in power that are still drinking those margaritas going, hey, check that out. Nah, not going to do nothing about it. But we'll watch. And I've been saying this for a while. We're going to start seeing this become, you know, it's going to get faster and faster, and the changes are going to become more dramatic and more undeniable. And one of the links when I was looking around for stuff from the telegraph.co.uk, there's a small piece just saying, are you concerned about Antarctica's melting ice? An ice shelf of 5,000 square miles in western Antarctica has started to collapse in what scientists have labeled as further evidence of global warming. The Wilkins Ice Sheet, the largest on the Antarctic Peninsula to be threatened, is hanging by a thread, according to Professor David Vaughan, a scientist with the British Antarctic Survey. Although the disintegration will not have an impact on sea level, scientists are concerned because it shows that the Antarctic ice sheet is melting at a faster rate than expected. And then they ask the question, are you concerned about the collapse of the Antarctic ice sheet? Do you believe that our climate is changing as a result of human activity? What, if anything, can be done to limit the damage? And I got to say, the threads, the comment threads, is absolutely frightening. I mean, the level of ignorance that goes on. And this must be a really, really right-wing audience, or they sent the trolls over. I'll have to ask Gail what the bend of this particular publication is. I mean, is this a Murdoch thing? I don't know. But the top comment says, I'm less worried about the Antarctic ice melt than the large number of skeptics who have contributed to this thread. Evidently, there are many people who consider we can continue to eject huge quantities of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere without any effect on our planet. They will, if still alive, have a nasty shock in the latter part of this century. They are like the poor souls who, on seeing the drawback of a tsunami, wander down to the new waterline admiring the exposed seabed. And that is about the only sane comment on the thread that I have seen so far. You know, things like this. Not concerned by the ice shelf. We cannot stop it anyway. Very concerned at the complete lack of balance being shown by the mainstream media. This is a significant body of serious scientific opinion questioning. There is a significant body of serious scientific opinion questioning the efficacy of AGW theories and climate models. This goes unreported while the media concentrates on coming up with ever more cataclysmic headlines. Now, this goes back to what I was covering the other day. You know, do we shine the light on the skeptics to our own detriment? But I find it really frightening to see how, I mean, it amazes me how, you know, it's basically 99 to 1 in the science community on global warming. And yet these people come out and make these statements as though it's like, you know, a 50-50 argument, and it's not. And there are all kinds of things going, oh, it's all, you know, it's all just part of the cycle, and it's all just this, it's all just that. And Gene is reminding me, and I did, this is what I thought, that the Telegraph is rather right-leaning. But, you know, immediately you have all these idiots just coming on and going, nah, leftist media, oh, go get bent. You know, it's amazing the amount of denial. And is this just fear of actually having to deal with the problem? Or how dare you ask me to adjust my lifestyle for someone else? You know, is that statement that I mentioned the other day, you know, when I mentioned, you know, mountaintop removal and say, you don't live there, why do you care? It's like, we all need to care. We all need to care. Why don't you? And, you know, I actually don't want to go reading down this thread, because I do kind of agree with some of the points in the piece that I was reading the other day, that, you know, if I try and go at them on the scientific level, you end up lost in the minutia as opposed to looking at the whole situation. And the whole situation is pretty much undeniable. You know, and you know, we have this president over in the United States who makes comments, you know, this Easter egg hunt is dedicated to our clean oceans. You know, a couple days after just another report comes out about the dead zone in the Gulf Coast, where nothing lives. Oh, yeah, it's clean? It's clean of anything living, you mean? And Cobwebs makes a comment in the chat room about Noah. There are people on this thread who actually bring up Noah and the Ark as a way to counter the global warming theories. Noah and the Ark. You're going to bring up a fairy tale. I mean, it's just absolutely insane. And someone even linked to a global warming test, your global warming knowledge test. And I went and did it. And I mean, you want to talk about an absolutely manufactured for a political deniers quiz. I'm going through this, and the responses were just incredible with the way that it twisted everything around. And, again, bringing up that long-debunked theory that it's all due to sunspots and solar radiation. I mean, we've seriously buried that one. And Annette asks if the stuff flowing down from West Virginia is causing the dead zones in the Gulf. Maybe part of it, but more to the point, it's the runoff from mechanized farming, fertilizers, hormones, chemical runoff. I would think that the sludge from MTR is all part of the toxic cocktail. However, a lot more of it has to do with other chemical runoffs, you know, the big pig and chicken farms. There's huge problems with this also just off of North Carolina from what I remember, too, because of the chicken and pig farms there. You know, all these hormones that we don't need, growth hormones that we don't need. Not to mention the antibiotics, you know. Because one of the things that's happening in these areas is, you know, it's not just, you know, big fish and whatnot that aren't there. It's protoplasm and ectoplasm that can't survive. And that's the very bottom of the food chain. And when the very bottom of the food chain dies, we're all screwed. We're all screwed, like, beyond recognition. Oh, I had another link about this. I'm going to try and find it here. But, it's incredible that you can have something. And there are some people saying, no, the Antarctic ice has grown. They're lying. It's like going, wait a minute, satellite images don't lie. Jesus. Absolutely unreal. City Morning Herald had a piece on this as well with an amazing picture of the Watkins ice shelf breaking apart, kind of a long shot, kind of looking down a section of the ice shelf as though you were looking from the top of a bowling alley lane. And it's frightening stuff. It freaks me out to see this. But, you know, they go again and explain, you know, the 13,680 square kilometer Wilkins ice shelf began, blah, 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 blah. The most recent satellite images taken by the center on Easter Sunday show the ice shelf is hanging on by a single strip of ice 6 kilometers wide, strung between two islands on the southwest Antarctic peninsula. The center's lead scientist, Ted Skambos, this is the U.S. National Snow and Ice Data Center, who first spotted the disintegration this month, said the ice shelf collapse was taking place in one of the fastest warming regions on Earth. In the past 50 years, the temperature in the western Antarctic Peninsula has risen almost 3 degrees, or about a half a degree each decade, and that's centigrade. The collapse underscores what the Wilkins region has experienced an intense melt season. Regional sea ice has all but vanished, leaving the ice shelf exposed to the action of the waves. And the action of the waves, just pound it until it breaks. And then it's got all this nice, you know, lubrication of melted ice between the actual sheet and the earth underneath, and it just slides off. You know how, you know, if you drop an ice cube and let it melt a bit on a table, and you end up with a bit of a puddle, and you can just tap that ice cube, and if the table's not level, it'll just go. Same thing, but on a massive scale. And this is uncomfortable laughter. I'm not happy about this at all. But this was bound to happen. The scientific team that charted the Wilkins collapse included members of the British Antarctic Survey who organized flights over the shelf after being alerted. The ice shelf is hanging by a thread, David Bond of the British Arctic Survey said. One of Australia's leading Antarctic scientists, Dr. Ian Allison, who examined the new data yesterday, said the collapse was an indication of how quickly change can happen in the polar regions when a critical point is reached. The area is showing extreme warming, Dr. Allison said. The climate models all predicted that the anthropogenic, as in human-induced warming, the biggest increases are going to occur at the polar regions, and the biggest warmings we are seeing are in the Arctic and the Antarctic Peninsula area. Dr. Allison said it was likely the Wilkins ice shelf will hold on now because winter was approaching, but it would continue to collapse next January. I expect about one-third of the ice shelf to go fairly quickly next season. This would make the collapse the largest since the Larsen B shelf disappeared over 30 days in 2002. The rapid warming of the polar regions is causing concern amongst snow and ice scientists because of fears that large ice sheets and glacier melts will trigger a rise in the global sea level. Very, very, very simple physical thing. Displacement. For those of us that actually were taught science, starting to feel old here. I remember science. I remember real science. And displacement was something that you learned really early on. Dr. Allison said there would be no immediate threat of sea level rise caused by the disintegration of the Wilkins ice shelf. It was a disturbing sign that bigger collapses might come in colder regions of Antarctica. It is concerning because we don't fully understand the mechanisms occurring, and we don't fully understand the implications of what's going to happen to the grounded ice if some of the really big ice shelves go. Dr. Allison said it was significant that the warmer temperatures were now having an effect closer to the main ice mass of the frozen continent. If larger ice shelves start disappearing and melting starts accelerating, he said there could be significant sea level rises over the next century. 5 more degrees further south is the start of the West Antarctic Ice Sheet, much of which lies on rock below sea level. The director of the British Antarctic Survey, Chris Rapley, said if this were to disintegrate, it would raise global sea level by about 5 meters. Okay? 5 meters. Better than, what, 16 and a half feet. Generally, a meter is about 1.1 yards, just to give you that rule of thumb for all you folks in the United States. That just, you know, that's amazing. If this, he has already described the West Antarctic sheet as an awakened giant. Scientists have calculated that the sheet is losing about 132 billion tons of ice a year. And yet there are people on that other thread that will actually tell you that it's getting bigger. And I wonder how many of these people who make some of these claims think that we're just getting out of winter down here. Do they have that little understanding of how the planet works? We just got out of summer. I know this is heavy and scary, but hey, this is, you know, these are the signs of the reality of what's going on. You know, and to not do what we can is so thoroughly irresponsible. So, you know, we need to start acting. And some places are, you know, some places are. Now, you know, this is... I keep referring back to my conversation with my brother. I was talking to him about solar, you know, solar geothermal. My favorite subject of alternative power generation. And he's like, "Oh, I hadn't heard of that." And you know, he was saying, you know, I want to see more nuke plants put up. And I said, not as economically viable as they make out. And I said, this is cheaper. In the long run, this is cheaper. And, you know, I think I'm going to send him some stuff on what solar geothermal is all about. Because I don't think over there people are hearing about it. If you're not listening to this program, and my brother doesn't get to listen to this show, he's off, you know, rebuilding a vet's hospital at the moment. So he doesn't get to listen to this. And aside from myself and a few other shows out there, you know, Tom Hartman covers some of this stuff really, really well, although I don't get to listen to him as much these days. This information doesn't get out. You know, when I told him that, look, there's a huge one of these plants being built in California right now. It's based on Australian technology. He goes, "Oh, really?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "So why would you take the risk of building something that could leak radiation, having to subsidize hugely for a system that actually is not as dependable as they like to claim?" The Canadians are a lot more open about discussing how, you know, some of their newer nuclear power plants go offline fairly often. A solar geothermal plant doesn't go offline. It's pretty cool. And the math that's been done has said that with a 200 square mile area of desert out in California, we could generate enough baseload power to power the entire United States grid. That, to me, is plausible. We're going to go to the phones. One of my favorite people in the world to call at this program, Alan the Trucker, is on the line. How you going, Alan? Welcome to the program.
Hey, John. It's a pretty good show. It's kind of a scary subject, though.
Yeah, but, you know, it's something that we got to talk about because, you know, these are those things where you can kind of show this to some people that are iffy on the subject and say, you know, this hasn't really been happening at this rate of speed ever in history, you know, not in our history. So, you know, maybe you need to rethink your stand on this and that this really does apply to you.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever changed this past, I don't think. Is that correct?
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. You know, every time we get a well-tested model, it's always seemingly twice as fast as the last model, and you can pretty much predict the next time they do a model, they're going to find that it's accelerated again. And this is all down to that the entire system is going, it's a feedback loop. And the more we keep feeding into it, it just continues to accelerate. It's just like, you know, sticking a microphone in front of a speaker. And when the microphone hears its own signal out of the speaker, it just feeds itself and it gets louder and louder and louder and louder until it collapses if you don't stop it. So it's the same exact thing. It's the same. It's the same. You know. It's the same action, but we're dealing with a chemical and temperature issue, as opposed to an electrical and sound pressure issue. It's the same effect.
They've got to give me the guy some property around Hilton Head area, around that area down in South Carolina. It's kind of like a swamp area. And
I know Hilton Head.
Well, not Hilton Head itself, but right outside of that area, because that's way too expensive for me. But I was thinking, that's all going to be covered up with water. And I kind of insinuated to my friend that, and he kind of laughed about it, but he's a friend. I don't want to see his house to be swallowed up with water. But that news tells me about that ice melting.
It might not happen in his lifetime. But it could happen in his grandkids' lifetime if we don't take some serious action now. And the thing that I fear, Alan, is the fact that we have allowed people to stall for so long that we have gotten to a point where we already are seeing the effects. The process has already started. So we are in a race to just try and slow down the damage. We can't actually stop it. We need to at least slow it down, because it is the human race's survival at stake. The Earth will continue, whether we're on it or not.
That's pretty bad. I mean, I don't see why they... How bad does it have to get before people wake up? Particularly the people running the government.
It comes down to being unbelievably short-sighted in so much of this. You know, this Telegraph thread that I'm talking about, most of the responses are all, you know, saying, you know, Gordon Brown just wants to tax us. Just wants to tax us. And people are just so worried about their bloody own pocketbook and their wallet when they don't, and they won't look any further than, you know, tomorrow. And you know, and a lot of these people are pumping out kids at an unbelievable rate, and it's their short-sightedness that is going to be passing this problem on to their children and their grandchildren. And that's what I find so unbelievably distressing, that you can bring children into this world and not give a damn about what you're doing to the planet.
Yeah, I know what you mean there. I've got relatives who have too many children, I think. They can't afford. Even if you can afford them or not, there's just too many children in the world.
There's too many people.
In this world. Yeah.
Yeah. The Tom Hartman's Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, which I still reckon is one of the best books to read for the uninitiated, gets into all of that and how we are, you know, artificially keeping a population going that this planet cannot sustain if it weren't for the mechanization and the fossil fuels. We wouldn't be able to sustain it, and now we're getting to the point where we're running out of these things, and we're going to start seeing food shortages, we're going to start seeing massive droughts. We're going to start seeing, you know, this is going to become actually an international security issue. Populations are going to start shifting because they can't survive where they are.
It sounds like it's a mixture of, like, religious fundamentalism that brings population too high and greed for a few corporations like the coal industry and the oil industry. But if we could just change the greed and just change the economic system, we could go over to alternative energies, and that would even bring more people to work, I would think, bring more jobs in. but it's just the money would be dispersed in a different way.
The basic formula these days, kind of going around, is for every dollar invested in alternative energy and efficiency now will actually relate to $4 in savings down the line. And if you can't see that as a good business investment of actually, you know, a 400% return, you just have, you know, you have your head in the sand. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like we have this part of the population that, you know, a whole bunch of bloody ostriches with their heads in the ground going, yeah, I'm right. They can't see me.
Yeah, I've been looking at solar panels lately. They seem kind of expensive. If you look at them for the long term, they pay off. I mean, you got free energy.
Yeah, and you and I have been talking about this for a while. The efficiency of the panels is continuing to get better. This is why, I don't know if you heard the show where I was reading a story that Betsy sent me about the Austin energy utility that has an incredible rebate scheme to help people install solar panels in their homes, because they're seeing it as being an investment in their economic future, and the idea of micro generation spread around and feeding the grid is going to be crucial, because they're seeing the fact that carbon trading is going to have to come in. So the price of coal-powered energy is going to go up, and it's going to go through the roof. But then those carbon taxes, or you know the fees for polluting, then need to be fed back into helping people absorb the cost of the increased, you know, power generation costs. You know, it has to be a full circle kind of way of going about it. The polluters have to pay to help clean up the system. It's that simple. And I don't see what is wrong with that.
Do you folks over there in Australia, do y'all have tax credits for having solar panels?
Yeah, in fact, the Howard government tried to repeal them about a year and a half ago, saying that people weren't taking them up enough. But they'd only been doing it for a couple of years, and they weren't really promoting it. And there was one of the morning news programs here caught wind of it and started a petition on their program online telling the federal government that, you know, they need to not end these tax credits, but they actually need to increase them. And the program went and delivered, you know, something like, you know, I think it might have been more than 100,000 signatures, and said, look, this is the Australian people. Out of an audience of, I think, 300,000, one-third of this show's audience, you know, demanded of the government that they continue to do this and actually promote it more, because the more we do it, the cheaper the more it's taken up, the cheaper it's going to become. Just like anything, you know, in business, once things become mainstream and you get past the initial R&D and the initial cost of development, again, you'll accelerate the development and the efficiency, and you'll bring the cost down. And
yeah,
it was an embarrassing... Go ahead.
Yeah, I think they're going to have tax credits over here, and they took it out of the energy bill just like at the last minute, and then they gave tax credits to the regular guys, the oil and the gas and the regular polluting people. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, that and what I'm finding interesting is that many states, though, are bucking the trend of the federal government. California's done it, Texas is doing it, various other states are saying, well, if the federal government's not going to do it, we're going to do it. And if the states are doing it, then the federal government should come in and match it, and then we'll really be able to make this stuff take off. And, you know, I've reported about where permits for new coal-fired power plants are being denied because of the fact that, you know, they say that this new plant will be carbon sequestration ready. And they're asking the questions now, well, if it's only ready, you can't have the permit. It has to be doable when you build it, or else you're not getting the permit. So they're denying the permits because that technology is still a pipe dream. Now, I saw a program here not long ago where someone from, you know, the Energy Council of Australia or whatever, who represents the coal industry, said that they have a very viable plan and it just needs investment. Well, I think that investment should come from the carbon taxes that they will pay while they're still polluting, if they actually think that they're going to be able to get this technology working. But it shouldn't just be a handout for the government, for an industry that's already making huge amounts of profits creating energy in a dirty, carbon nasty way. And the real incentives need to go to the new clean technologies. It's one thing that I'm happy about the New South Wales state government did create the first ever in the world 100% renewables energy plan, which I am signed up to. And, you know, it cost me $100 a quarter. But by increasing my efficiency in the house, I've been able to absorb that increase and seen almost no difference in my power bill. So, you know, again, it's that, yes, the cost isn't going to increase, but we have to become way more efficient than we are.
So, sound enough, that means that the energy that you buy, they try to get it from renewable sources?
Yeah, it comes from, yeah. So, you know, obviously the exact electrons that come to my house might not come from there, but by buying into the scheme, they are buying a certain amount of power every year from biomass, wind, solar. And biomass is doing really, really well here in New South Wales. And most of it is by dealing, and it's again one of those win-win situations where they're taking waste material from landfills and capturing the methane, which is, you know, per part is more damaging to the system than carbon, and actually burning that to create energy. So it's a win-win. We're changing one toxic element into energy, which ends up decreasing the carbon footprint. And I actually get on my power bill, you know, my actual carbon generation every quarter. It tells me how much carbon I've produced and compares it to what it would be if I wasn't tied into the scheme. And it probably drops my...
So when they burn that garbage, that biomass, does that create any pollution, or that just eliminates it?
It's eliminating the methane. Now, it does create carbon, but it's much less carbon than a coal-fired power plant. Far less. And so, like I said, it's a bit of a win-win because the amount of methane that would be released free into the atmosphere is probably even more damaging than, is way more damaging than the amount of carbon is produced by burning it. So biomass has this ability to kind of, you know, get at it from two different directions, because methane is much worse on the environment than carbon. But carbon is what's used as the discussion point because it has the highest concentrations, and it is what is pumped out at the highest levels by the way we generate power and by automobiles and various things. So, you know,
and what about geothermal?
That's it. Geothermal is another huge one. I mean, that's actually something that they're looking at here in Australia, because we have some really great pockets out in the desert that are great stores of geothermal power. So that is another thing to be looking at, and that is another thing that's free energy. And I just want to clear up. Gene's just asking. He goes, you mean I only pay $33 a month for power? No, Gene. I pay $33 a month to get my renewable power, my quarterly power bill is about a little under $300 a month. And it used to be the same when I was using less efficient lighting and not being careful with what I did before I was paying the extra bit for the cleaner power. So dollar for dollar, it stayed virtually the same, but I am getting it from better sources. And every year, the New South Wales power grid is getting more and more of their power from wind, biomass, and solar. Then, you know, they just keep continuing to build the infrastructure. So I'm helping invest in the future by doing it this way, by taking on this extra bit of responsibility. So it's all working out, you know, it works out money-wise, but you have to get into the efficiency. And I hate to do this to you, though, Alan. I'm running out of time, man. It's been so good to talk to you. Where are you at the moment?
I'm in Virginia. I don't know exactly what city I'm in. I'm headed down to an art show in Hilton Head. So I hope that ice doesn't melt by then.
All right, mate. You take care of yourself, and we'll speak with you soon, man. Always great to talk to you.
Nice talking to you.
All right, mate. And that's good old Alan the Trucker. You never know where he's calling from. He's a good man. And, you know, he does his thing. So thanks, everybody. Appreciate it. Thanks to Bob for producing. Thanks to Scott Barry at B1 Louder Productions. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Thanks to the mods and the bloggers and the ninjas and everybody that makes this thing run. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why. He said, you look like a fine, upstanding young man. I think you do. So I took off my hat, I said, imagine that. Huh, me, working for you. Whoa. Sign, sign, everywhere a sign. Blocking out your scenery, breaking my mind. Do this, don't do that, can't you read?
Gay folks, sexual choice, and just choose it. They prefer.
Only progress we've had is the progress of deception. Again, it was a systematic use of deception that got us into Iraq. And now the systematic use of deception is being used to keep us in Iraq.
Is that one of the reasons why Admiral Fallon is gone? Because he was a truth teller?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You know, talk to General Shinseki, who told the Congress what it was going to cost before the invasion of Iraq. I mean, he was summarily dismissed, ridiculed by the administration.
What should be the United States' stance toward Iran?
We should.